Welcome to episode 9 of Good Beer Matters.
I was brewing about every other weekend, so about 20 to 24 times a year I was brewing, and really just kind of honing in on some style. I'm looking at a beer and smelling a beer to have discussion points, you know, with friends, or to spark curiosity.
Just because a brewery is big, that doesn't necessarily mean it's good. The inverse of this formula is also true. Homebrewers and small breweries often make very good beer. In the case of Robert Masterson of Resident Brewing in San Diego, California, the beer is phenomenal. In this episode of Good Beer Matters, we continue exploring the world of small breweries, their evolution, and their challenges. Thank you for joining me as we head to sunny San Diego to live like a local and drink like a resident. So during this recording, will you kind of tell us your tell us about your origin story getting into brewing?
Yeah, so it basically started from the home brewing side. My sister and brother-in-law, my sister Jenna and my brother-in-law Jimmy, bought me a homebrew kit in 2009. I started brewing with a neighbor down the street, and he was doing some extract brews. And started brewing with him, going to festivals, joining homebrew clubs, getting kind of more into it, and kind of broke away from him because our schedules didn't really match up, and kind of just kept on taking it to the next level. The homebrew clubs, you know, was an opportunity for me to meet kind of local homebrew legends like Ken Schmidt and Kelson McNair and Paul from Rip Current. So it's just a way for me to meet kind of like-minded individuals, talk about beer, talk about process.
And what were the names of some of these homebrew clubs that you joined?
So the first one I joined was Society of Barley Engineers, and then I also joined Quaff. So I did those, I think, about 2 or 3 months apart, just really just wanting to you know, meet more people, and kind of just get as much information as I could.
And what were you, I want to kind of fill out I want to set the scene, you know, what were you doing and where were you living when you first got this homebrew kit?
So Carlsbad, California. So it's North County of San Diego, so just maybe 30 miles of downtown San Diego is where I live in Carlsbad. Yeah, so I got my homebrew kit in Carlsbad. So yeah, just homebrewing in the backyard and, you know, bringing growlers of beer to friends, family, homebrew meetings, kind of anywhere I could.
And what was the beer scene like in Carlsbad when this happened?
My favorite places to go in that time was Pizza Port, Alpine, Stone, Green Flash, and a few others. There wasn't obviously the mass amount there are now, but there was a good, I would say, 30 or so. But they were spread around the county. So, you know, San Diego's a pretty big county. So I was, you know, I would go and try beers, and if I liked them, I went back more, which I'm assuming everyone does kind of the same.
Yeah, that's the typical wash, rinse, repeat. If you like it, return.
Yep.
Okay, so here we are back in the story of you are homebrewing and spending a lot of time with homebrew clubs, and you know, take it from there.
Yep. So basically, you know, once I kind of started ramping up, I was brewing about every other weekend, so about 20 to 24 times a year I was brewing, and really just kind of honing in on some styles and entering competitions. You know, there was some local competitions, San Diego Fair, some other ones locally, then the Homebrew Association competitions, first round or second round festival or competitions. Yeah, just trying to keep on improving, and then 2013 rolls around, and a couple of buddies of mine in the homebrew club wanted to enter the AHA comp, which is a homebrew comp, with Stone Brewing. And so my buddy Ryan, Rashawn, and Peter and I were talking about it, and we decided that we wanted to brew basically a pina colada IPA. In 2012, we started talking about it. From there, Ryan and I brewed that beer a few times. We entered it in the Stone AHA comp, won the competition, and got to brew on Stone system. It was I think we did 12 batches, so 12 120 barrel batches, which was the largest at the time for Stone Brewing the collab.
So you didn't brew. So I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you didn't brew just one time as a perk of the winning the competition. You brewed it again. How many times?
We did, but Stone brewed it 12 times. Yeah. So we went in for the initial brew, the single batch, but, they have, well, at the time, at least they had 360 barrel fermenters. So they are triple batching into each one of those. So we went into for the initial brew day. They knocked out the first batch and then they kept on brewing it. I think they kind of staggered a couple of the brews. I don't know exactly. We didn't get all the details of, like the brew schedule. Mm-hmm. But I think they did maybe like two fermenters full. And then like a week later, they brewed some more kind of to keep on kind of pushing it through distribution.
Which, by the way, congratulations. I know that was some time ago, but that's still, I mean, Stone Brewing and San Diego is probably akin to Deschutes where I am or Dogfish Head over in the Northeast. I mean, that's a very big deal.
It was the kind of the most glamorous homebrew, local, homebrew comp around. And, everybody that was winning them before were pretty much, well known and well regarded in the homebrewing scene. So definitely super exciting to win that. It was fun working with Mitch and the team. Mitch Steele, when he was at Stone, it was a fun process. The beer didn't quite turn out how I would have liked it, but it was still an awesome process. And having the bottles go to 40 states, it was great.
That was kind of like watching your baby grow up and move on and travel the country.
Yep.
What was the public response to your Pina Colada IPA?
I think everybody was pretty excited about it. I don't know if they, I think they kind of wanted more coconut, which I wanted more coconut flavor as well. But that size of system, the amount of coconut that we would require was quite a bit. So not exactly sure if they used what we had suggested or not, kind of hard to tell. I remember one meeting that we had with Mitch and, Ryan and I brought a homebrew in and we tasted ours and we tasted the Stone one. And like, we kind of like knocked Mitch off his seat. He's like, wow, there's so much coconut in here. So that was funny, like looking back, but also like, well, we can still do this. We can still make this happen. But, I didn't want to overstep my bounds as far as what I was making Stone do, but it was still it was a great time, great process.
Was it kind of like you got the keys of the kingdom, but you didn't get a free run of the joint?
Yeah, there was still some doors locked that we weren't allowed to go in, and I didn't want to. We did as much as we could, and we try to be respectful of Stone and doing everything that they did for us, but. But that's kind of what inspired kind of the next chapter was kind of taking that homebrew recipe and making it a reality on a commercial scale.
Well, and that's the part I want to go next is tell me about that. Tell me the story of that transition from, significant award winning homebrewer to, hey, let's go pro. And if I remember the story either on the website or what Scott was telling me was that this wasn't like a career change. There was kind of like a dipping your toes and kind of easing into this process. But please correct me if I'm wrong, but tell me the story about going pro and starting Resident.
Yeah, so there was a comp right after that. There was a Carl Strauss competition, which is a pretty good size here in San Diego. I think they only distribute in California, so you may not have heard of them or not.
Oh, I'm from San Diego. I know Carl Strauss very well.
Okay, yeah. So there was a Carl Strauss competition right after, so it was kind of early 2014, I believe. And I ended up winning first and third in that competition, first for a double IPA and then third for an English barley wine. And basically after that, you know, my brother-in-law Jimmy's like, we got to get your beer to the market. This is a great time. This is a great opportunity. Let's go find it. So Scott Dixon, Jimmy, and I kind of started working on what would that look like? You know, is that going into Miramar, which is a warehouse and industrial location in kind of central San Diego? Is that a good place? You know, there's already breweries already there. The square footage is cheap for rent, and let's make it go over that way. And so basically Jimmy was just kind of looking all over the place and found a great opportunity with Mina and Brendan, which are two more of our partners in the resident ownership team, and decided to kind of gut the local, which has been around for 13 plus years, add on the brewery space, which is adjacent, kind of, you know, one's on one street, one's on the local on Fourth Avenue. We're on C Street, but we're kind of adjoined as well. So it's, we have a glass wall between the two kind of suites, as you call it. We basically, gutted the local, revamped it, took it from, kind of an older looking to new and bright, vibrant, modern, up kind of a little bit more upscaled as well.
Well, and again, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but give me just a brief synopsis. I mean, I know the local has a little bit of history in downtown San Diego, which downtown San Diego is quite a backdrop to try an endeavor like this. But tell me a little bit about the local.
I'm not familiar with the local as a long-time patron. I really only really knew of it a couple times before getting involved. Than I would say now. But basically, the local's been around for 13 plus years, and it's craft beer bar. I wouldn't say it's completely craft. Unfortunately, we have some longstanding, patronage to some other brands that I wish we didn't, but that's not part of my decision. It was the previous ownership. Have some prior commitments, and they wanted to keep those going. So it's heavy craft, but some other things in there as well. We have 52 taps in the front bar, and that's kind of a mix between my beers and everything else. And then all in the back bar, we have 18 taps, and those are all my beers.
Excellent. And just as a reference, I'm fairly familiar with downtown San Diego. I practically grew up in Horton Plaza, and that's a different story, but you're just a couple blocks away from Horton Plaza. And what else is nearby? What other notable landmarks?
So Horton Plaza is just kind of a block that's on Broadway. We're on 4th and C. We're also on the trolley tracks, right on C Street. Basically, it's called like the business district of downtown San Diego, so it's not quite Gas Lamp. It's just kind of before Gas Lamp. We're right in the thick of things.
So someone could have one beer too many and literally go outside and grab a trolley and head on home?
Definitely. Yeah, we're, I think, one block away. So it's either on 5th Avenue there's a trolley stop, or on 3rd Avenue there's a trolley stop. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's very close and convenient.
That's cool. So tell me, what were some of the challenges of trying to get this endeavor started? Scott shared with me some of the story. It sounds like it was an interesting process, but by all means, share with me some of the challenges that you guys had trying to put the resident into the local.
No, The only like really major one I remember is some SDG&E issues. So the power, you know, the local power company here in San Diego, we had some issues that they basically dug down in into the concrete that we kind of dug out because we were going to pour a new slab, and SDG&E decided that wasn't going to be up to code, and we had to kind of work around that issue and build a kind of like a wall of electricity, sort of like a, there's a whole panel that's outside the building and a kind of a whole wall that's inside the brewery from the outside all the way to the local space. So that was kind of a pain. Obviously additional money, additional time, I think it was like a 6 or 8 week setback on time. But I think it was kind of normal things, I guess you'd say. It was everything from money, from lack of experience on my part, kind of knowing what I'm doing here, you know, as we're going along. I basically designed and built a brewery without knowing anything. So I kind of asked questions as I go along, ask friends, ask other brewers, ask the equipment manufacturer, and just kind of put it where it was. And it's worked out so far.
Were you still able to remain in contact with the folks over at Stone Brewing to get tips and how to get things started?
I don't think I ever reached out to Stone. They're a behemoth in the San Diego scene. So I was reaching out to smaller folks that were more, you know, they've got a fully automated brew system, and everything's hard piped, and they're 20 years ahead of me as far as what's going on. So I was asking the local smaller breweries that were more my size for tips and tricks and best practices.
Gotcha. Well, and Scott gave us a tour of your brewery. I don't think you were there that day, but we did get to see the setup and the challenges, especially of just moving kegs to the cooler. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so basically we have some basement space in our suite. So we're coming on C Street. We have two doors coming into the brewery, and then that's where the brew house is. That's where all the fermenters are. We have a small office in there as well. But then our cold storage, our grain storage, our CO2, other miscellaneous things are all downstairs. And so we have a fairly large cutout in the floor that goes from the brewery to downstairs, and we currently have a hoist or a pulley type system that we're dropping kegs and pulling kegs up, and we're dropping 4 to 6,000 pounds of grain, every grain order downstairs, and repackaging it. So it's a lot of manual labor. We don't have space for a forklift, and even if we did, the only thing that we would be able to really use a forklift for is kind of for stacking and unstacking barrels. We wouldn't be able to really use it for, moving grain around or anything like that. So, we got a manual brewery and a manual way of lifting and getting our kegs and dry goods and hops and everything else out.
And if I remember right, I think he shared with us that it was like a minute round trip just to get it from your level to downstairs and back up.
It is. It's not fast or efficient, but it's kind of what we have. We had planned on a elevator on 4th Avenue, which is kind of like where the local is. The basement goes all the way out from kind of C Street all the way out to 4th Avenue. So it's this long corridor. But as we're going through the process and spending more and more money on the local and spending more and more money on the brewery, it was just out of the question to spend the $50,000 to $60,000 for the proper elevator that would go in there.
So you're saving that for your Christmas list one day, I take it.
We're actually going through the process of trying to solve another, basically solve that with a different issue, with a different solution. Yeah. So we'll see if we can find something that's more efficient or more kegs or faster or all the above. So
Well, and another,
we're working that in the process.
And another interesting dilemma that you guys have to deal with that many, many breweries don't even have to think about is right out your brewery door is the trolley line. And so you really have one street where you can get rid of your spent grain and hops and effluents and dealing with that in the center of a major, major downtown San Diego in the country. Can you speak a little bit to that?
Yeah, I would imagine that we have a very unique spot as far as delivery. You know, most breweries have multiple, bay doors where they just open it up and drive a forklift right in, the grain in and out, spent grain in and out. But we don't have any of that. We have basically a sidewalk outside on C Street, and then right out, past that is the trolley line. So we basically have to park or double park on 4th Avenue, and they'll drop the grain, wheel it up the sidewalk, wheel it in the into the brew house, and we take it from there. So it's very manual, and we don't have any really way around that at this point.
Other than maybe bribing the meter readers with really good beer.
Yeah, we've got multiple tickets from the San Diego meter people. They get mad at us all the time for being being in spots down there. But it's industrial. It's we're a manufacturing company. We have trucks and we have a van where we are loading up our kegs and unloading empty kegs. So it's kind of just a part of business.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about how did you come up with the name Resident? What's the story behind that?
Well, we had, I don't know how many meetings. There was maybe a half a dozen meetings on names. We had enormous text strings of names and kind of put them all together. And just tried to kind of hammer it out. We worked with a marketing company to kind of go through them and go through the whole process of not a business plan, but a marketing strategy type thing. But the name actually came from my cousin Jessica. So that was one of the names that was on the list, and it kind of came down to two names, and that was the one. So yeah, my cousin Jessica, she's the one that thought of the name, and that's the one that stuck, and that's what's trademarked, and we've had it ever since.
Mm-hmm. Is there any relation? I mean, resident and the local, is that just pure coincidence, or was that part of the reason why it made it to the final round?
I'd say the latter. Yeah, it's part of the reason why I made it to the last round, because it did kind of fit in with the local, and it had a good ring to it, and we thought it just fit well. So that was most likely why we chose that name over any of the others.
All right. So Robert, I've just got a few other questions for you, and we'll wrap this up. But I want to hear about you, some of your favorite, either one or some of your favorite beer moments, especially if you have kind of that every beer drinker has kind of like an origin story of this. I call them gateway beers, this beer that just opened up your eyes and made you realize, oh my God, I love beer. I need to find more. What story do you have to share along those lines?
I guess I started getting into craft beer from a buddy of mine. He had Stone IPA at his house for a barbecue or something. I'm not even sure what year, 2006, 2005, somewhere around there. I always, even my younger days when we had just turned 21, buddies and I would go to BevMo or something and go, okay, we'll get a six pack of this, we'll get a six pack of that. Just all kind of random stuff, some Pete's Wicked Ale or whatever, type of stuff, and just try different stuff. So I've kind of always been interested in different flavors. Kind of got away from it, being in college, you kind of just drink or you drink just cheap stuff or whatever. It wasn't really a thought. Then once I started, the family and, kind of a little bit more income where you can spend some money. That's when kind of the craft beer side was more interesting, and I wanted to try You know, once I had the Stone IPA, I wanted to try all of the IPAs. You know, anything that I can get my hands on, especially stuff that was local. You know, go to the tasting rooms and you know, speak with the tasting room people and brewers and etc. So.
Mm-hmm. Then kind of like tagging on to that, tell me about an experience you had where just granted, the reason why I ask this question is more for my podcast, and I'm a certified Cicerone, and beer is wonderful, but beer and food together is just, is a gift from God, in my opinion, if you ask me. So tell me about a moment or just a food and beer pairing that just parts the clouds and lets the angels sing for you.
Yeah, see, food and beer to me, sometimes, I don't know, I think a lot of times, I don't know if it's the chef's piece or the brewery side is pushing, but I feel a lot of times they are maybe trying a little too hard. I really just enjoy having the beer. Like, I don't know, like, it's, you say like a pairing, but the pairings can sometimes be, look good on paper, but aren't executed as well as you would have hoped. Actually, I was at a beer dinner last night at Urge, and they had this killer black cod, this miso, I think it was like a miso black cod that was the most amazing piece of fish that I've ever had. But then it had an interesting pairing, but I thought that I would not have chosen for it. But the beers were good, and all the food is really good. So the on the food and beer side, I'm not sure if I've had amazing moment together.
Well, I'm sorry, you kind of left me hanging. So they had this black cod. What beer did you have with it that worked?
I was going to say what I thought, but I didn't want to misspoke. But I'm pretty sure it was what kind of porter was it? I think it was like an imperial porter, imperial stout, and I just thought it was kind of an interesting pairing. And sometimes those do work really well, where you have kind of contrast and versus, you know, a sundae or something, you know, some dark chocolate and an imperial stout. But I think it was an imperial stout, and it was just the stout was a little drier and pretty roasty, ashy. Versus like some of the imperial stouts where they're a little on the sweeter side, you know, more residual sugar.
Mm. So this was a little bit more on the dry Irish side.
It was to me, it tasted like an imperial Irish stout. It was really roasty, ashy. And the beer was good, but it was just like, it's just the pairing seemed like it wasn't quite what I was hoping for.
Gotcha.
So I actually just tasted some other beers. They had a barrel aged strong ale that I thought tasted a lot better with the cod, but still it was a pretty incredible night. Great food and great beers.
That's fantastic. A couple other questions. One is in the vein of how beer can affect us as culture, how it can affect our relationships and our moods and our beer and food pairings, whatever it is. That's where this next question comes from. But the question is, why does good beer matter?
Good beer. Why does good beer matter? I think to me, why I think good beer matters is I don't want to drink boring, really things that I don't enjoy, I guess. I most of the time are drinking alcoholic beverages, beers, to kind of taste the nuances, think about the beers. I'm not just consuming a liquid for a result. I'm looking at a beer and smelling a beer to have discussion points, you know, with friends, or to spark curiosity of like, well, what did they use in there? So really it's a talking point for me. It's something that interests me and I like discussing with people.
Perfect answer. Thank you very much. Last question is, do you have anything you want to add to any of this?
So yeah, this is going to be in a few different places. So yeah, if you're ever in San Diego, there's lots of great beer in San Diego, but come check us out. We're downtown, inside the local 1065 Fourth Avenue. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, at Resident Brewing is our handle for all of those. We're doing some fun stuff, I'd say a good amount of the time. You know, we have some core beers, but we're also, you know, trying to try new styles. We just brewed a grisette with Epic. We did a collab beer with Epic. We're trying to do a decent amount of collabs here and to wrap up 2017 and go strong in 2018. So yeah, just having fun with our friends, trying new styles, exploring, you know, new hops, new types of hops, like these cryo or lupulin powder type products. So yeah, it's definitely going to be still interesting for the foreseeable future.
Excellent. And what's the website where people can check you out and watch that killer video?
ResidentBrewing.com. Which video are we talking about? Because we just actually released a little spoof video yesterday, I think.
I haven't seen a spoof video. I just I'm only aware of the one that kicks off the website experience.
Yeah.
Which what it is. I mean, you guys have a great website because websites are just informative. They're a landing page so people can find out more. You guys have created that into a cool experience. So congratulations to you guys and the team that you had put that together.
Yeah, there's definitely, in my opinion, I still want more in the website, but we're doing so many things all the time, it's hard to keep up. To stay with us and probably most breweries these days is to be on social media. It's on our Instagram to find out what's going on. You know, what are we up to? You know, who are we collabing with? What special ingredients we might be using? And fun spoof videos like the one that's up right now. So go take a look.
Awesome. Yeah. If time were a commodity, then I would have started this podcast probably in the spring. But here we are. But anyway, thank you for sharing your story with me for the article. Thank you for sharing your story with me for the podcast. And all of you, I tasted all of your beers and they were all spectacular, but two really stuck out of my mind. The Golden Kiss Saison was fantastic, being a Saison fan. But I kind of go in and out of love with IPAs. It kind of depends on my mood and the season and the IPA. But that Vacation Coconut IPA that you brewed just rocked my world. It was fantastic. So thank you. Thank you for brewing some amazing, amazing beer.
Sure, yeah. The Vacation will, I'd say, 95% of the time be on tap. So if people are interested, yeah, we try to keep that one on. We try to limit the amount of days that it's on, you know, in kegs. So we're brewing it every like 2 to 3 weeks to make sure that it's always fresh and a new batch is always coming. So
perfect. Well, if you ask my kids what are the things I love most in this life beyond my family, then they will tell you beer and coconut. So that was just perfect for me.
Cool.
Awesome. Hey, thank you so much. Have a wonderful night and take care and keep brewing.
Thanks. Cheers.
And cheers.
To paraphrase one of my favorite movies, Ratatouille, not every homebrewer can be a great pro, but a great pro brewer can come from anywhere. Robert Masterson could easily have been that guy who made that beer that all his friends love and left it at that. Instead, he put in the effort and the passion to grow and share his vision with anyone willing to taste something better. If you ask me, that is the hallmark of a craft brewer. In the next episode, we continue our series on small breweries and head back to Oregon, where in a town surrounded by forest, one can have good crack and get squiffy on a fresh pint of British-style real ale. Good Beer Matters is a show about great beer, great friends, and the experiences we create together. But it's also about better appreciation of the beer you enjoy. I believe better education leads to better enjoyment. So if you're a beer and food professional or even a beer enthusiast, then please subscribe to Good Beer Matters and leave a rating on iTunes. Better yet, send me an email at jeremy@goodbeermatters.net and tell me what beer stories or knowledge you'd like to hear more about. After that, grab a beer, hang out with friends, and let the world open up. Thank you for listening. Cheers.